Okay. Shalom aleichem, Rabbi Yisai. let's talk Purim. I want to start with a statement that we actually just discussed on Shabbos, a statement of Chazal, a startling statement, which probably most people have heard and may have wondered about. Chazal say, Tov sheberofim legehenim, the best of doctors goes to Gehenim. That's it. Like, it's as simple as that. Probably you all heard this maimer. You probably heard the maimer, right? Obviously, it needs interpretation. And a number of interpretations are given. I want to draw, for our purposes, on an explanation of the Maharal. Meaning, just in a general way, we say that it should be obvious that this is a warning, right? It's not a sentence. It's not a verdict. It's a warning. We want to alert you to a danger. If you're a doctor, we want to alert you to a danger. Understand that the road to Gehenna is open. How's that? So the Maharal says as follows. On the contrary, the purpose of the Maimer is to keep you away from Gehenna if you're a doctor. Right? That's the purpose of the Maimer. So the Maharal says like this. A doctor is involved with Teva. That's his profession. He has to be very proficient in Teva. Be very well versed in Teva. And he has to be dealing with Teva all the time. There's a danger that the doctor can start just seeing in Teva. Meaning, there is a contained system of cause and effect, which you can master, control. I said this over in the Sunday shiur, and then one of the women spoke up. She said she had been a doctor in a hospital or something. And she said that they call it little God syndrome. Little God syndrome. And so that you have all the, like, the underlings, you have the big doctors at the top, and then you have all the underlings, the people, the residents, and the nurses, who are always all talking about the gods, right? Like this, you know, they decide this, they decide that, and nobody can question them, and et cetera. You know, you're not allowed to question. It's a very religious concept. And not now religion, by the way, but it is a religious concept, okay? But et cetera. So the feeling that there's something called Teva, I have a handle on it. And of course there's Hashem, but this box of Teva is something independent, something I have control, something I understand. Or even if, let's not talk about the doctor, we can also talk about the patient. I might not have control of it, but I am subject to it. I'm a victim of it. Or I just see it as that. I see it as that. That's a danger. Because it basically turns Hashem into something we can't call this kfira. It doesn't make the grade of kfira. Bechaira, maybe it does. I'm not sure. But it the person believes in Hashem. He believes in Olam Haba. You can check all the 13 Ikarim. But in terms of the very specific here and now of what I'm dealing with, Olam Hazeh kind of inyanim, there are rules for Olam Hazeh. They just operate the way they operate. Here, Hashem is not involved. Whether I think this consciously or whether I sense it and experience it that way, this is what a Chazal are warning against. What's the other side of the coin? The other side of the coin is the famous Ramban at the end of Parshat Tzvi. I guess if you're going to learn one Ramban, I guess it would be that one. Very fundamental, famous Ramban. But the Ramban says, now we have to understand that the great nisim that Hashem did for Klal Yisrael, Kriyas Yam Suf, the Makkos, Gilead, all the great nisim that Hashem did for Klal Yisrael, so mitoich hanisim hagluim atamakir banisim hanistarim, the Ramban says the purpose of them is, it's kind of like what we might call a marimokim. It's an indicator. Hashem gives you a flash and says, now find it everywhere. Because the Ramban goes on and says that is primarily how Hashem conducts his people, by weaving his hanhaga into Teva. And the challenge is to be able to be experiencing that, to be able to be experiencing how the Teva is breathing Hashem. And the Teva is breathing Hashem. There's a very interesting tshuva of the Chacham Tzvi, where apparently some Rav had said in a drasha, Teva is Hashem. And there was a whole uproar about that. How could you say such a thing? And the Chacham Tzvi has a very interesting tshuva saying that he's actually right. There is no such thing as teva. Or, if you want, you know, first I'll say that. Afterwards we'll say what teva is. But first we'll say that. There is no such thing as teva. Rabbi Victor Miller put it is, teva, the word nature, he said, is a meaningless word invented by the Greeks. It has no meaning. What is nature? The Kuzari breaks down this point very much and says, basically, you know, the Kuzari, like this, the sum up of his discussion is he talks about it at length, kind of showing, define nature for me. The Jewish Chacham is challenging the Kuzari king. Define nature for me. Finally, at the end of the day, he says, you know, wherever you use the word nature, if you insert, you simply insert the word Elikim, it flows perfectly, like it's perfectly smooth. You won't have to make any other changes in the sentence. Wherever you use the word nature, just insert the word Hashem. And then, you know, of course, the Kabbalim tell us that Hateva is Bigamatria Elikim, or maybe Teva is Bigamatria Elikim. Hateva. Hateva is Bigamatria Elikim. Now, to what extent we'll take this, I'm not going to get into it exactly now, but Teva, in a general way, and this is subject for more specific discussion, but in a general way, what Teva is, if you'll call it, Hashem's regular schedule. Okay? If you know, and this is not the case, but if you know that predictably you could find me at a certain minyan every day, day in, day out, right? It doesn't mean that it's any less effort on my part to get to that minyan. It's not something automatic. It's not something that happens by itself. If you know that every day, you know those types of people, you can set your watch by them, don't set your watch by me. But you know those people that you can every day, you see them walking down the street, it's 1:15, right? So does that mean that it happens by itself? It doesn't mean that it happens by itself. It just means that this is a predictable schedule. Is it conceivable that the person would deviate from that schedule? He might. There isn't any change in the reality behind it if one day he goes a different route. Right? It's not like there's a different system at work here now. So there aren't... Okay, so this is the understanding. We want to understand that Teva, we want to see Hashem in Teva. More specifically, we want to see Hashem at every curve and turn of our life. When I say every curve and turn of our life, I mean to take this all the way. You want to see Hashem in your breakfast. You want to feel Hashem's care for you at lunch, etc. But lemaisa, in the events of your life, in the course of your life, to be experiencing Hashem dealing with you, and like the Ramban says, to recognize Hashem woven into all the ins and outs of Teva. So now, there are two. There are two systems. There are two anhagas, if we'll put it that way. There is the anhaga of supernature, right? Now, in the time of the first base of Mikdash, that was a regular open business. And the base of Mikdash, there were open nisim going on all the time. It was a matter of routine, right? We know that. Second base of Mikdash, for a little bit of time. Second base of Mikdash was a very different story. There's no comparing the two periods. But the first base of Mikdash, that's why the first base of Mikdash is something that Lamais is our frame of reference. We need to put a lot of effort in order to really to connect. That's why Nach is such a tricky thing to learn, because we really have to move into a very different reality. It's not the reality that we're accustomed to. It's a reality of open Shechina that manifests in all kinds of different areas in life. But if we'll just talk in a very simple terms, right? Wars were miraculous. There were Nisim Gluyim happening, sometimes more, sometimes less, or even greater, to an even greater degree at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. But throughout the period of the Bayis Rishon, when we had the full effect of Shechina Sheira B'Yisrael, Nisim Gluyim happened. They happened. What level? How often? Fine. Discuss that. But they weren't a major deviation from reality. There were things happening on a supernatural level all the time. And with the Chorban, a new anhaga came into effect. Anhaga of plain Olam Hazeh. Okay. Now, the Kuzari says something interesting. The Kuzari says, this is fundamental. Soon we'll really get into the specifics of the Megillah, because to a very large extent, we may say that this is the lesson of the Megillah. This is the point of the Megillah. The Kuzari says that Hashem's hanhaga of us, what are we? We are, our essential definition, the Jewish people are the Am Hashem, which means we are the Merkava Lashchina in this world. We are the reflectors of Hashem in this world. We represent Hashem in this world. And Hashem Kiviyachol reflects off of us in this world. Now, we usually talk about that in terms of our Avoida, right? We represent Hashem in this world by showing our dedication to Him, etc. But it's not just that. There's also a passive aspect to it. For example, Kriyas Yamsuf, the great Nisim of history. What was that? Hashem was showing, I am here. How did He show I'm here? On us, right? We were the ones reflecting that Hashem is here. The Jewish people are the reflectors of Hashem in this world, the representatives of Hashem in this world. I want to use the more classic term, Merkava Lashchina. So yeah, besides our Avodah, setting our Avodah aside for a moment, a Kriyas Yamsuf done for Klal Yisrael showed Hashem. The miraculous victories that we had in the time of the Beis HaMikdash was Hashem showing Himself through us. The supernatural levels of prosperity that we enjoyed in the times of the Beis HaMikdash was Hashem showing Himself through us. Nevuah was the epitome of that, right? Where Hashem mamish showed Himself through a human being. And this is what we are. Now the Kuzari says, once you move into Galus, it takes on a very different form. Once we're in Galus, it takes on a different form. And you know what? We can approach Purim from this angle too. Like, you know, we'll enter its Purim from this door. I was meanwhile still circling Purim, figuring out exactly where we'll enter. We'll enter from this door. And here's where we'll bring out the other type of anhaga of Hashem. The Chavis Halvava says, you hear people say, you know, you show me a miracle, a real miracle, and I will, you know, then I'll be a changed person. I'd never sin again, etc. We probably all have enough experience, our own life experience, to know that's not true. Even though we never saw Kriyas Yamsuf. Because we know that we did have life-changing experiences. Life-changing experiences are life-changing for a short amount of time. Right? And the difference between we've heard things, we've been exposed to things that made us feel like I'm a changed person now forever. That's something of an effect. But the forever turned out to be 2-3 weeks. Often that's generous, right? With a nes, it's the same way. It's a koyach of human nature. A nes did not change you forever. You still had to work. You had to work to carry the effect. And that's how it works now also. But that's not our point. The point is, Chaim Zalbam says as follows. You want to see a nes of the same magnitude of the greatness of the past, you want to see it today? You can. There are miracles that are always spectacular, just you have to actually use your mind's eye to see them. Meaning, it's not a type of nes. Kriyas Yamsuf is a type of nes that hit you in the face. You were splashed with cold water in the face, right? Here's a nes that you have to think about it for a minute, but then it can hit you that you are witnessing a nes no less spectacular. What's that? It's the fact that you're here. You look in the mirror, really? You step back into a vacuum, step back into just a broad perspective of history. You go look in the mirror and you see a Jew there, you should say, that's not rational, it doesn't make sense. Can't be. You'd be blown away, amazed or disbelieving. Go back, you know, with a view of what's going to be going on over 2,000 years, and you should simply be skeptical at the sight of yourself in the mirror. Can't really be, right? You are seeing an open miracle because, yeah, there should not have been the Jewish people here today. Your existence is a nes. Because have you ever, there is no such phenomenon, to my knowledge, anywhere else in the world in history of a nation that has been for so long not settled on its land, defenseless, but not just not settled on its land and defenseless, But and yet the mightiest nations in history made it their agenda to wipe them out. And they're still around. And those mighty nations, by and large, exist on history shelves. There is no such thing. Can you point to any other such phenomenon in such a broad way? And they tried. You have to give them the credit. They tried. They put in valiant efforts, right? And so the Gemara already says, Chesed Am Asim Ara Kadosh Baruch Hu. In the time of Achashverosh, Hashem made a statement. But after that, Hashem never allowed us to be under the subject of subject to the rule of one power. That was true in the time of Achashverosh, right? But after that, Hashem kept us dispersed because of this. But Lamaisa, you see throughout history, I think we talked about this Hanukkah time, because Hanukkah, it's the same point. Hanukkah and Purim are both bringing out the same point. Hanukkah in terms of our spiritual existence and Purim in terms of our physical existence. How mighty nations, they managed finally to stamp us out over here. We popped up over there, right? They stamped us out over there. We flared up somewhere else. As they say, in your face, right? You just couldn't get, they just can't get rid of us. This, the Khazari says, Davka the fact. Now he adds to this a sober point, which is also not our subject right now, but just in order to present the point, Bishlemus, he says, Davka the fact that we are such a persecuted nation for so long, and yet we're still here, is a different, it's the other side of the coin. We talked about Hashem reflecting himself off us, right? We talked about Hashem reflecting himself off us. This is the other side of that coin. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, it was done through the supernature reflecting off of us. Now, throughout the Golos, it's done in this way. Persecuted in an uncanny, unnatural way. Anti-Semitism makes no sense. And it never goes away. And it's a ball that rolls from one nation to another. You know, one nation, when one nation decides they had enough of it, a different nation steps up to bat. It's always there. That's why the seasoned Jew with proper hashkafa, we don't like anti-Semitism. Okay, I'm not trying to be like, you know, cavalier. But we're not shocked by it. We're not indignant about it. We know it's going to be there. It's there. It's part of our history. That itself says it's also part of Hashem demonstrating that he's here. And yet we're going to persevere all the way through. These are all, it's the other side of the coin of Hashem showing his presence through us. Off us, through us. So that's actually a big part of the significance of the Nes of Purim, of the Pirsumei Nisa aspect of Purim, right? Pirsumei Nisa gets a lot of weight in Halacha. Even though, ironically, Pirsumei Nisa primarily, it's such a big concept in Halacha, it's given so much weight, right? It's Mechai of all kinds of things, and it overrides all kinds of things. It's ironic that it's Dafka in the two mitzvahs that are Derabbanan. There might be aspects of Pirsumei Nisa, but we'll say there also. But the two famous Pirsumei Nisas are what? The two famous Pirsumei Nisas are Hanukkah and Purim, right? Davka, the Derabbanan. But you know what? This is the idea, because Pirsumei Nisa, when we're talking about the immensity of Pirsumei Nisa, we're not talking about publicizing the Nes that happened in Persia, 2,000 and whatever years ago. Or publicizing the Nes that happened under the Greeks back then. Those are both representative. Those are both forerunners of our reality throughout the days. Here Hashem was making a statement. And the Pirsumei Nisa is in the fact that Haboisai, Stavshin Pei Beis, we shouldn't have been here, right? Now listen carefully. You can hear a lot of noise coming from the Kivun of Ramat Beit Shemesh and Purim. We're making a lot of noise. We are here. Right? There's a Dafka. We congregate, supposed to get together in shuls. In Asik. It should be a big ASIC when you're getting together at Yesuda. You have music blaring. The Jewish people are alive and kicking. Walk through the streets and see all the people jumping around and see the noise being made. If it makes you a little nervous and it's not your style, but appreciate the fact the Jews are here. They're in your face. They're making noise. Experience it on yourself too. That's what the way I think of it is. Make an experiment on Purim. You know, there was a philosopher who said, I think, therefore I am. So on Purim, it works a little differently. What's that? The card. So here's a different take on that. You make an experiment. You take a piece of tasty food on Purim, touch it to your taste buds. You feel anything? I taste, therefore I am. And this is what you want to experience. You take a little bit of wine. I don't know, wine might make me feel like I exist a little too much, but it doesn't work well for me. But this is the idea. It's physical. We are here. Our bodies are here. We test it again, right? We pack it in. Am I really here? Oh, yes. I'm packing in more, and it's going in, and I'm experiencing I'm here. I'm here. That is the nes, not just of, oh, we survived Haman. It's that in Tavshin Pei Beis, forget Haman. Go 1,000 years back and kind of look forward in history. Doesn't make sense that there would still be Purim celebrations in Tavshin Pei Beis. This is the Prisumini, so we're bringing that out. We're making a lot of noise. We're here, like it or not. And we like it, others don't. We're here. This is the Prisumini. Okay. So now we've made our way into, so it's once again, it's Hashem showing through the Jewish people, I am here. But it's more than that. It really is the story of history. And this is Vaita. We're getting even closer to the story of the Megillah. You know, where's Waldo? Yeah, familiar with that? It's a book. Everybody knows what that is? Everybody here knows what that is? Where's Waldo? Yeah. What's that? Where's Waldo? Right? You open those books, each page has tons and tons and tons and tons of detail, right? Each time it's like from a different scenario, a different place in the world, a different period in history. Tons of detail. They're like a lot of fun to just look at the pages and see all the different things going on in them. And there's always that one figure. Waldo, good old Waldo, right? Waldo Goldberg, I don't know what his name is. But there's only that one figure. Now, you take a person who doesn't know the concept. He doesn't understand what is the concept of where's Waldo. And you show him this book. And you say, okay, what's this page about? This page is about the Middle Ages. What's this page about? This page is about Africa. What's this page about? Okay. Fine. Then you tell him, hey, you see this one little guy here in the middle? The whole book is about him. The purpose of all that detail is to cloud him and see if you can find him. Oh, come on. There's so much going on here. Right? But you know what? The story of world history is, where are the Jewish people? That's where great, mighty empires came and went for the purpose of bringing out that point. You know what the significance of the Roman Empire was? That a nation as mighty as the Roman Empire couldn't get rid of us. That's the historic significance of the Roman Empire with all of their history. Nimrod was called Amraphel. Why? Rashi says, Omar Poel. Omar Poel. This is the greatest monarch in the world at that point. He was he introduced the concept of monarchy, right? And he said, that's his name, Omar Poel. He threw Avraham Avinu into the Kivshon Eish. He did so many things. And this is the man who built the concept of monarchy, the first mass, major ruler in the world. I think, I don't know, Kedar La'Omer, where did he fit in? I don't know, but whatever it is. But you know what Chazal are telling us in this is, all that was because he was going to be the man to test Avraham Avinu. And Avraham Avinu would withstand the challenge of such a mighty opponent. And therefore, the significant Yisroel's significance in history was, Nimrod's significance in history was Omar Poel. He's the guy who threw Avraham Avinu into the Kivshon Eish. All of his accomplishments and all of his empire, etc. That was the story of it all. Okay. Now it's invited to the Megillah. This is Lamaisa, the story of the Megillah. The Jewish people are now in Golos. They're in Persia. Whereas they used to be in Eretz Yisrael under the direct conduct of Hashem, now they moved under the rule. They kind of blended in with the big world out there. They are subject to them. They're under their rule. Mefuzar mefayrod beino amim, all over the place. And we just don't see that on Haga. Now we're just kind of subject to whatever is going on in the world around. Somehow or the other, the war between Russia and Ukraine, really, it's a story of the Jewish people somehow. All the major world events are. Hu Hashem Elokeinu b'chol ha'aretz mishpatav. He is Hashem, our Hashem, and his mishpatim, however you'll translate that exactly in this context, are all around the world. was stressing that whatever is going on all around the world, everything that he's busy doing there, is as Hashem Elokim. It's in the context of he is conducting our affairs. He's doing things for our purpose. What happens? The Megillah starts with the story of Achashverosh. I mentioned this yesterday in Chavis Alav Hashir. Don't worry, we're not spending the rest of the time on it. And here's where we want to see this in every curve of the Megillah. We paskin that you have to read, there's a machlokes in the Gemara, from where do you have to read the Megillah in order to be Yotzer? Or the point being, you have to read the essential part of the story. You have to start from the main part of the story. Machlokes is where, what do we consider the main part of the story? Is it from Balailahu, where things really start happening? Is it from Haman? Is it from Ishihudi Mordechai? We paskin like the sheep of that. No, you have to start all the way from the beginning. Gdulas v'shal Achashverosh is ma'akev in understanding the story of the Megillah. Why? Why is the whole story of the Mishnah, with all the descriptions of why is that essential to understanding the story of the Megillah? The answer is because when we see throughout the Megillah how Hashem is busy manipulating, right, all the Shalom Bayis intrigues in the palace, right, between Achashverosh and Vashti, and all the ins and outs that are going on, and then we understand that this is all revolving around the Jewish people. So Hashem says, I want you to chap the immensity of that. If you're talking about a cute little kingdom, okay, you have a kingdom of 100,000 people, and there are 25,000 Jews there, a quarter of the population. And I tell you, you know what, I'm conducting all of the affairs of the kingdom around the Jewish people. That's pretty significant, but say that 25,000 out of 100,000. Hashem says, no. I want you to appreciate what we're talking about here. We're talking about an immense, immense, immense kingdom. 127 different countries, right? 127 different nations. The Jews are a tiny minority who are kind of dispersed all around. And Achashverosh is all the way at the top. The things that are going on there, what do they have to do with the Jewish people? Of course they're going to affect the Jewish people just like they're going to affect everybody else. Hashem says, no, I want you to appreciate that what's going on there is all around the Jewish people. Because this is me. This is not Teva. You moved out of Eretz Yisrael now. And Adar Rabba, the girl says that it's an even bigger point, now. Because as long as the Jews are in Eretz Yisrael, the Beis HaMikdash, Hashem's whole focus is focused on them. So, yeah, okay. Obviously, Hashem is conducting the affairs of the Jewish people. But it's brought out to an even greater extent once the Jews are Mifuzo Refarad Ben Kol Amim. Now this concept of Hashem conducting the affairs of the Jewish people becomes world-encompassing. Hashem is going to be busy manipulating the ins and outs of all the so-called world leaders around the tiny minority of Jews who live in their country. And that's really the story of any of the political developments, any of the conflicts, etc. Even more than that, the Gemara makes this point. The Persian capital was originally not Shushan. Originally, the Persians supplanted the Persians supplanted the Babylonians, right? Paras and Modai conquered Babel. The seat of the Babel Empire was in Babel, the city Babel. It was Babel, the empire. And then the capital city was also called Babel. Like Babylon, Babylonia. And the city was called Babylon. New York. Yeah, Lahavdil, that's right. Right. Not Lahavdil. It's Babel, right? So that was the capital of the Persian Empire. Achashverosh got a bug in his head. He had to have a throne like Shlomo HaMelech. A replica. Couldn't use the real thing. We know the story, right? Had to have a replica made. Okay, where do they make? Where is the major? Carpentry industry in Shushan. So they're going to have a throne made in Shushan. Nobody thought of the fact that the warehouse panel is big enough, but they have no way of transporting it. Nobody thought of that. Only afterwards they finished the throne, and now they can't get it. They have no way of transporting it. It's too big. They have no way of transporting it to Babel. Achashverosh, right? is not known as the epitome of sensible. He has to have that throne. He's going to move the capital. If the throne can't get to Babel, the capital has to move to Shushan. Right? So you have to appreciate the balagan of moving a capital. We discussed this. Imagine, we said yesterday, if it would be decided that the capital of the U.S., right, Washington, should move from Washington to Muncie. Forget New York, right? Teaneck, okay? Flatbush. They're going to move the capital to Flag. Can you imagine what a balagan that would be? What a big ASIC that is, right? And this is what's going on. They're moving the whole capital of the massive Persian Empire over to Shushan. Major events that's going to be affecting everybody, right? Why is that happening? You know why that's happening? Because there's something that needs to unfold. Mordechai needs to be involved. What's the problem? Mordechai doesn't have any plans of moving to Babel in the near future. What do? We move Babel over to Mordechai. We move the capital over to Mordechai. That whole balagan of the Persian Empire moving its capital was because Mordechai had no plans of moving in the near future. And the whole thing had to be near Mordechai. That's what the Gross says. It's so important to appreciate the immensity of the Persian Empire in order to really chop the significance of the story of the Megillah. And this is what's going on all throughout the Megillah. Now, I really don't have to give you examples of all the ins and outs of Hashem manipulating things one step before it happens, right? Of Him conducting things. There really is room to go on about this more, but I know I want to approach the same thing now from a different angle. Mordechai, as the Rebbe of us, teaching us this lesson, teaching us this lesson. I have to like just take a minute to like boil things down. What should I not say? Shlomo Brevda asks, I think it's a very, very chashuv point that he makes, very, very fundamental pshat that he uses. Shlomo Brevda asks the following question. He says, Mordechai, what does he do first thing after he hears about the Gzeira? So you have heard two things over the years. You read one thing in the Megillah, but perhaps even before that, you learned in kindergarten that he did something else. Right? You probably maybe learned that before you know what it says in the Megillah. He approached three school children, right? Three cheder children, asked them, what did you learn in the cheder? Right? And what's he told? Those three psukim of salvation, altira, right? Altira and fachapisa, the three utsoits of the sufar. Those three psukim of salvation. And now Mordechai knows that it's all going to be fine. So Shlomo Brevda, it's going to put the two together. The Megillah says, Vayilbash sakva eifa. How do you put the two together? He heard everything's going to be fine. Vayilbash sakva eifa. What's going on? So Shlomo Brevda says the following. He says, Mordechai was living with that realization of Hashem in the Teva. For him, whatever was going on, it's certainly world events. It's the voice of Hashem. It's the voice of Hashem, right? We've said many times, and this is also the call of the day, the Rambam at the beginning of Hilchos Tainius, right, that we have a chiyuv to interpret kol tzara, any tzara that comes on the tzibur, we have a chiyuv to interpret it as a call for tshuva. Not allowed to say we don't understand Hashem's ways and hide behind that. You can say that we don't understand the full intent, but the immediate call is that if there's a tzara on the tzibur, it's a call for tshuva. I'll throw in, even though we've been repeating this over the last 2 years, but everything going on lately in the world, you definitely have to be living with that reality that Hashem is shaking his world. From Corona, through all the different crazy things that we've been going on to what's going on now, if you are at all in the ballpark, you know, you have to be living with that constant call of Hashem. He's moving his world to a different place. And you better be hearing that call. Well, you know what? I'll say it a little differently. If you don't want to, you better be hearing that call. That sounds a little too harsh. Hashem is trying to produce something here, right? He's trying to bring, to reclaim his world, to bring people closer to him. Do you want to be a part of that circle? Then hear the call. It's an ongoing call now. You're repeating the same message. But whatever the case is, Mordechai hears about this gezeira. A gezeira on the tzibor is a call from Hashem for tshuva and tefillah. Hashem is saying, I want the Jewish people now to be doing tshuva, to be engaging in an intense tshuva and intense tefillah. How does Hashem express that? In the form of a Haman. But Mordechai doesn't even see Haman. Mordechai hears a call from Hashem. Now, let's say Mordechai suddenly discovers that actually nothing is going to happen. But there is this gzeira. The gzeira might be nothing, but it's there. The call from Hashem is still there. He knows that nothing is going to happen. But from a person of Mordechai's level, knowing that Hashem is calling, he got a nevuah that came in through the mouth of Haman. That's how Hashem often operates. He delivers messages to us through the mouths of our enemies. And that's what he did here also. Mordechai said, if that's what Hashem wants, I'm going to throw myself into this. It's not an issue of, is there a death threat over my head? Or is there not a death threat over my head? Now, Mordechai couldn't say that to the rest of the Jewish people, because it would be very, very difficult to really hold yourself up to such an intense, you have to realize, you have to appreciate what Haman achieved in terms of Kiruv. There was never such a Kiruv activist like he was. He did a greater job than all the 48 Nevi'im and 7 Nevi'is in bringing the Jewish people back to Hashem. Transformed the Jewish people. I shouldn't exactly say transform. I should really say it brought them back to their original state. Started settling into a gullus reality, kind of like complacency starting to settle in. They needed a big jolt in order to get to the next step of getting to the second base on Mikdash, etc. And Haman achieved that. And that's really the story of the Megillah, right? Haman came, the Jews gathered together for 3 days of intense tshuva and tefillah. Like, if you've ever experienced a elevating, inspiring, life-changing Yom HaNeiraim, or some sort of atzera, some sort of gathering, a Yom Iyun that you felt or like made a major impact on your life, this was like the epitome of that. This was an experience that if we would only be there, we would know what life-changing means. Those 3 days of tshuva and tefillah with the sword hanging over them. And it had the desired effect, right? What did Hashem say? I want tshuva and tefillah. And the effect was, they came out and Haman was hanging on the tree. So this was very, very quick, right? This was the man, he had issued the gezeira 3 days earlier. This was the man who was the most powerful man in the kingdom. Had the king wrapped around his finger. He issued the gezeira. 3 days later, he was hanging on a tree because the Jewish people responded how they ought to. But for Mordechai, this was simply a call from Hashem. That was how he experienced it. And not only that, but this is the way Mordechai is moving through the whole story of the Megillah. Mordechai is resisting this reality now of things changed. We had been in a state of lemala miderech hateva under Hashem in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, but now we just kind of moved into the reality of the rest of the nations until Hashem brings us back. Mordechai was resisting that, and he was living with that reality of this is Hashem just as intensely involved. I have to hear it and see it and be attuned to it. And this is actually threading many of the events that are going on. That's a very long discussion. I'm talking about Mordechai's Hanhaga. Mordechai doesn't bow down to Haman, right? Why didn't he bow down to him? He told me, well, you're not allowed to bow down to Avodah Zarah. It's Yehoring Val Yavah. Not so pashut at all. If you learn this again, Sanhedrin, it's quite likely that there actually was no chiyuv of Yehoring Val Yavah. Because it's what we call Avodah Meira. Everybody understood that everybody bowing down, nobody was worshiping Haman. Everybody understood that except Haman. Right? They were bowing down because they didn't want to get in trouble. And it's quite likely that put it this way, it's questionable whether there's a chiyuv of Yehoring Val Yavah in such a case where it's exceedingly clear that people are bowing down just because they don't want to get in trouble. And Tosfos there, it's a sugya there. I'm not getting into the ins and outs of it, but Tosfos says, if so, why didn't Mordechai do it? Tosfos has two answers, the second of which is Kiddush Hashem. Kiddush Hashem. He didn't have to do it. Everybody would have understood that bowing down just because they were scared. Kiddush Hashem. Meaning what? What that means is that Mordechai was resisting. We're running a little bit over time now. We need another 5 minutes, but feel free to get up and walk out. I'm serious. People do it. It's a really, you're like, won't be like you're doing something. Mordechai did not want to sink into that sense of now, you know, kind of like the lights are off. I, as a Ben Yisrael, am so much above the rest of these people. These people are nothing. And I want to maintain that consciousness in my own mind. The Lubavitcher Rebbe of Russia, Vayatz, with Yosef Yitzchak. So he was arrested by the Russians. It was the day he was actually sentenced to death until they extricated him. What's very fascinating is that he, you know, you have people writing about great people and their experiences. Here, it's autobiography. He wrote it himself. So, you know, when you hear people writing stories about a great gadol, they tell you what he was thinking and what he was feeling. And it's like, that's what you're thinking and you're feeling, like shkoyach. That's often the problem with these. But here, he wrote it himself. And he wrote something. Well, first of all, there was a very, very amazing anhaga that he had when he was in captivity. But he describes his thought processes. And what happened was he decided when he was arrested that I am going to maintain a sense of superiority. They are not going to move me at all. And therefore, he related to them in a condescending way the whole time. This was a decision that he made. Like, for example, just a few of the different things that happened there. They gave them a very hard time when they were just filling out his form. In terms of, like, just one example, they asked him, what's your official title? I guess everybody had a title. So he said, a respected citizen. So they said, no, there isn't really such a title. He said, look, I didn't ask to come here. If it doesn't work for you, this is my title. And he wouldn't budge from that. They didn't know what to do with him. Okay. When they brought him in for interrogation, at one point they said to him, do you know where you are? He was brought in by members of the Yevsektsiya. The Yevsektsiya were the Jewish communists. They brought him into the interrogation room and they said to him, it happened was like this. They brought him into the interrogation room and he said, when I walk into a room, everybody stands up. Okay. So they said to him, do you know where you are? I said, yeah, there's no mezuzah on the door. And there's only one type of room that's potter from a mezuzah. I must be in a bathroom or something. This was his anhaga. He suffered for it. He suffered for it. But he maintained a condescending approach. They're not going to get an ounce of submission from him. Now, what is the idea? What was the idea? It wasn't like this macho kind of thing. He said something very profound on why he decided to do that. He said that in terms of his own emunah in this situation, he writes, this is what's amazing about it, because you'll never see somebody writing about a great person, writing in a tzaddik story, that he felt his emunah wavering, right? That he was scared. He wasn't scared at all. So he writes that he was scared. He writes that he was down. He writes that he was worried about how is he going to get through this. He writes how he was mechazik himself in bitachin. And then he said that I realized that if I want to be able to hold on to my bitachin properly, I have to completely focus on the fact that I am way above any of these people and I have to act that way in practice. Otherwise, I'm going to lose my bitachin. I don't remember exactly how he said it. I want to make sure that I'm not, but I'm quoting the way he wrote it. He goes through his own, and therefore he said he made that decision. I'm going to keep myself reminded of the fact that I am a Ben Yisrael. I'm an Oved Hashem. These people are nothings. Even if I suffer as a result, later he wrote about, he said that he was altogether, he was in prison for 11 days. And he said afterwards something to the effect of, if someone would give me $1 million to repeat the experience, I would not take it. If someone would pay me $1 million to take the experience from me, I wouldn't take that either. This was what Mordechai Lemaisa was doing when he refused to bow down to Amun. He said, we are now subjects to these other nations, but I am connected with Hashem. These people are vermin. Right? This is Hashem. Hashem wants me to be in a certain setting. That's what these people are. They have no influence over me. There's no one deciding my affairs or conducting my affairs other than Hashem. Mordechai maintained that clear vision and manifested it by Lekam v'leizam mimenu. It didn't even give a nod. Haman was nothing. Everybody else was bowing down. For Mordechai, Haman was nothing. Right? And the Bessler and Maral, they talk about how Mordechai didn't even bother taking a different route. He could have gone somewhere else when he saw what was going on. He didn't bother because he wanted to live in maintain this reality of it's about me and Hashem. Hashem is just as present here. Whatever's going to be going on is going to be through his mouth. And therefore, he angered Haman. Now Haman issued a gzeira. Mordechai Baita didn't see Haman. He saw Hashem. And even more than that. That's why also, it says that he put on Sagva Eva. Esther is frightened. She sent a set of clothing, right? She sent a suit of clothing. He refuses to put it on. At least the basic Isha, he could take it off for a half hour and go meet Esther, right? He could take off his Sagva Eva for a half hour and go meet Esther. So no, the Malbim, the Rav Isaac Sher, say it's the same point. As far as he was concerned, this was nothing other than a dynamic between the Jewish people and Hashem. There's nobody else involved here. And therefore, he was going to do Ishtadlis. He told Esther to go to the king in a way that actually went against a lot of the rules of Ishtadlis, okay? But to remove for even a moment my focus on that this is about us and Hashem, he wasn't going to do that. Therefore, he wasn't going to take his Sagva Eva for a minute. Right now, it's a time, as far as the dynamic with Hashem goes, it's about Sagva Eva. That's also why afterwards, when he's led on the horse, and we're going to end with this, when he's led on the horse, Chazal tell us that he told Haman, it's coming straight from his fasting, right? He told Haman 2 weeks to climb up on the horse. So Haman had no choice. Haman got down on all fours so Mordechai can climb up. Mordechai climbs up on him, and as he's climbing up, gives him a gezunta kick. So Haman says to him, when your enemy falls, don't rejoice. So Mordechai says to him, and it says about Jews, about you it says, you'll tread on his high places. Now, let's note something. This was at the time, Haman was not demoted at this point. Haman is still the most powerful man in the kingdom. Haman is not planning to have Mordechai hung, right? There was a little bit of a hitch in the plan, but we'll get back to it, right? The gezeira is in full effect. Let's remember, when Haman was leading Mordechai on the horse, he wasn't hanging yet. The gezeira is in full effect. He's continuing to anger him? What's going on? Comes back to the same point. Mordechai is right to bringing out that point. Haman? I'm wearing Sagva Eva not because I'm scared of Haman. I'm wearing Sagva Eva because Hashem is conveying a message. Haman himself, there's nothing here. There's nothing here. I'm not going to try to avoid angering him. On the contrary, this is nothing and nobody. Whatever is going on is us and Hashem. So here we brought it out, Mitzah ben Hag of Mordechai. Obviously, you don't need my elaboration. This is what's going on all throughout the Megillah. This is the point that it's bringing out. This is the lesson to us. This is the Kiddush Hashem of Galus, of when we don't have the Shechina begalut, of us being able to live that, see that, experience it all around us in our lives, every twist and curve in life, and with whatever's going on in the world around us, to simply see that. It's simply so, like we said earlier, Hashem woven into what we call the smoke screen of Teva. Okay. Very important. Come to you. Thank you.